Good afternoon and welcome to the City View podcast. Me, Andy Sylvester, editor here at City AM. In just a few minutes, I'll be joined by Guy Harrington, the developer turned lender heading up residential bridging loan operator Glen Hawk. Before that, though, the corporate and business headlines, and it is energy that's causing most discussion today. Energy firms and business groups have questioned the ambition at the heart of the government's new energy strategy. Prime Minister Boris Johnson's today announced plans for a raft of new nuclear power plants by 2050 and an accelerated move away from fossil fuels towards renewables. But groups question whether the government is moving fast enough. The boss of the UK's second biggest energy supplier, E.ON, blasted the government's energy strategy for failing to include plans to protect the country's poorest households and for not putting enough emphasis on energy efficiency. Michael Lewis, the chief exec at E.ON, said the energy security strategy needed to, quote, set a course for a zero carbon future and protect customers from the savage increases in energy bills. We got neither, he said. The IOD, too, were amongst the business groups kicking off about the ambition and the immediate term of the energy strategy. We were also concerned that the measures announced do little to help businesses facing high energy costs in the immediate future, the body said today. Meanwhile, London venture capital is now so buoyant that startup founders are batting away investors jostling to pump cash into their businesses. At least that's the view of innocent entrepreneur turned venture capitalist Richard Reed. Reed, whose Jamjar venture capital firm raised a fresh 100 million quid this week, including 48 million from the state-backed British Business Bank, said the amount of capital sloshing around the UK has turned the relationship of founders and investors on its head. Founders, he says, now hold the power. The world is full of money at the moment, and that money is all wanting to put itself into a UK startup, he told City AM today. Founders get to choose the capital these days, which was absolutely not the case when we were starting out. Raising money was the single hardest thing we've ever had to do in business, he said, reflecting on his time launching the smoothie company. Elsewhere, McColl's share price has surged 61% today, with a convenience store operator admitting it has no idea why. In an update on the London Stock Exchange, McColl said it notes the recent rise in the company's share price and confirms that it does not know of any reason for this price movement. The group have been hunting for a bidder as it attempts to dodge collapse with debts of almost £170 million. And Morrison's new private equity owner has suggested it would sell an undisclosed number of petrol stations in order to be approved by the UK's competition watchdog. The competition watchdog, the CMA, had previously expressed concerns that Clayton, Dubilier & Rice, CD&R, also own the petrol station giant Motor Fuel Group, as well as obviously picking up Morrison's petrol stations if the deal went through. CMA said the takeover could potentially lead to petrol prices rising in some 121 locations across the UK. Now we're joined by Guy Harrington, CEO of Glen Hawk, a non-bank lender which over the past 4 years has grown quickly to become a disruptive player in the bridging loan market. We're going to talk the housing market both in London and beyond. Guy, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, why don't we... We're going to talk a lot about the housing market more generally and what might be on its way over the next 6 to 12 months. But let's just sort of go back in time, I suppose, to where the idea for the company came from.
Yeah, sure. So without doing my whole sales pitch waffle, really, I've been in property for the last 16, 17 years. And during the later part of that career, I was borrowing off development finance and bridge loan firms to buy properties at auction. And I saw a gap in the market to create a non-bank lender, which was fairer on the fees, more understanding of the client's positions, and overall a much better lender than what I had experienced in the marketplace. So that's where Glen Hawk was born from my own experience of financing and the sometimes occasional poor, but also good experiences that I had along the way. And that was 4 years ago now.
Blimey, yeah, it's fast growth. Just for those who don't work in property, just talk about how that sort of bridging loan works in the industry, because it makes perfect sense once it's explained, but it can feel a bit sort of strange before you hear about it.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's two sides that we have. So the one side is the regulated bridging loans, which we are authorised to do through the broker network. And that's a classic chain break scenario. So you're moving from, I mean, on topic point, from London to the countryside, then we'll bridge your purchase. So a classic chain breaking situation for homeowners. But the more common use of the bridge loans is for investment purposes. So you might be purchasing a auction property and you need the funding within 10 days or even quicker than that in many cases. Or you might be purchasing a former office building and turning it into 10 or 12 apartments and you need the funds to purchase, to do the renovation, and then we'll be redeemed on our loan by like a 5-year commercial mortgage at the end of that. So there's a variety of uses. It's not the cheapest form of financing, hands up at that, but you can have the loan within 10 days. And we find a lot of our clients, and including myself, you pay to have the certainty of getting that loan completed and acquiring the property you'd like to nice and quick.
Yeah, for sure. Well, speed and urgency is certainly on on many people's lists at the moment, mainly politicians, I think, looking for answers to a cost of living crisis, rising energy prices, etc. Yes. So let's look at the market as it stands right now. We had the pandemic race for space, so to speak. We talked an awful lot about that. And we'll come back to what people are still looking for when they're in the market and whether there is that still push outside of London, people moving to the countryside. But let's just look forward the next 6 to 12 months. The housing market to me looks extraordinarily resilient considering the myriad headwinds to the UK economy. Is that your experience as well?
Yeah, I mean, we're certainly seeing no slow off this end of borrowers. And I suppose that's the best barometer I've got to hand here. Certainly last month was our record month of new lending to developers and investors. So there's certainly no tail off there. But I think being realistic, and I am a natural optimist, I would like to think a realistic optimist, we've certainly got to see some pressure on house prices coming up to, I would have thought, Q3, Q4 this year, not just the energy costs that have kicked in since a couple of days ago, but also rates are going to go up, I think, even steeper than most economists and most banks had even forecast, just to try and stem this inflation. I think naturally the Bank of England was looking to see inflation start to ease off and tail off naturally. But I think the reality is we're just not going to see that happen. And the rising rates and rising energy costs might do it for us. So how that will translate to the housing market, there's going to be a period of stasis, I think is the best way to put it. Probably treading sideways for a few months, maybe longer. And then ultimately, when the cheap fixed rates run out that were taken during COVID in 2 to 3 years, there's going to be a significant hit there as well. But as we all know, there's a huge lack of supply in the UK, which is only going to get worse. So could that support prices? Who knows? But I certainly think we're in for a bit of a rocky ride and probably a two-stage market with those homes that are in demand and the moves that are urgent happening, and they'll trade and the properties will be always held at good value. And then the second stage, which will be those that very sadly will need to sell in a distressed situation, which will create more of a renter's market. So yeah, there's certainly odd times ahead, but hey, who would have thought COVID would have created a booming property market? That was the last thing that I thought would happen. And I think a lot of pundits in the industry thought would happen, but who knows what the year holds ahead.
Yeah, you do wonder actually whether in the rear view mirror, whether the Chancellor would have pushed ahead with, for instance, the stamp duty holiday, because it seemed that the property market was pretty resilient even without that. Yeah. But I mean, that'll be one for the history books. And I guess we're interested in the here and now. We talked about supply and demand. In London, at least, supply will park controversies over supply for now. But demand, certainly during the COVID-19 pandemic, did seem to slip, particularly in central London. And we, you know, I don't think anybody doesn't have a story of a friend or, you know, people you haven't seen for a while because they moved out somewhere idyllic and lovely in the countryside, getting out of their Islington or their Herne Hill two bed and turning it into a five bed out in the countryside. Are we still seeing that, or is that settled, do you think?
That's a really good question. I think, I mean, from my own experience, I looked at doing that, but ultimately didn't. But I think the people that really wanted to did it, and they pushed the button, they went for it, they did the whole hog, moved out to the countryside, commute in, work a few days from home, etc. I think they've done it, and I do personally see a bit of it now. And as I say, our regulated bridge product does that. So we help people move from London to the countryside. And we're still seeing the odd move here and there. Not as much as we did during COVID, but certainly there's still people that are trickling out and thinking, okay, well, if my employer is going to be more flexible now, allowing me maybe 3 days in the office like we do here, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays come in, Monday and Friday off, then perhaps I can live out in Suffolk or Sussex or Surrey or wherever it might be. And my employer will be supportive going forwards of that longer commute. So I think people are just seeing how it all pans out really, and how their own work life situation unfolds. And I've seen some friends who did move out, some from London up to Manchester, thinking they'd be fully remote for the foreseeable future. And their employer's saying, come back in 5 days a week. So they've been put in quite an unfortunate position. But I think if you look at the London market now, it is coming back from what I see. Prime Central London, I believe, will always do well. If you just look at London and the UK as a whole, we're geographically well-placed in the world. We have the best legal system in the world. And we speak in neutral language, and we're incredibly diverse, which is a lot of boxes to tick. So I think, yeah, it's positive, the future here. But you add in the headwinds, the cost of living, the threat of, hey, another pandemic one day, then London can very quickly lose its attraction again. But as we say, who knows what will happen?
Well, indeed. I mean, on London being still a place to be, let's leave it there. It's rare I get to finish these podcast interviews at the moment with good news. So we may as well take advantage on this one. Guy, thanks so much for joining us.
No, pleasure. Really enjoyed it. Thank you.
That was Guy Harrington of Glenhawk, and that's all from me for the week. Tomorrow you'll be in the capable hands of Lily Russell-Jones, Nathan De Silva, and Charlie Conchi for the weekly tech and crypto update. From me, though, have a wonderful weekend. We'll see you again next week.